Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Mullen, and I'm joined at Cobo Hall with the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party, Brandon Dillon. Brandon, it looks like you haven't slept in about 3 days.
No, it's we had a busy weekend. We had our dinner last night, which was extremely successful, one of the most successful we've had in about 10 years. We had an unprecedented turnout at this convention, 6,700 credentialed delegates, which is by far a record. And we've got a lot of excited Democrats leaving this convention ready to get to work. So maybe we'll take a half a day off tomorrow, but that's about it.
Why are we seeing so many Democrats come out to this endorsement convention?
Well, I think there's a lot of things. We've seen this for the last 18 months where people are showing up at county party meetings, getting involved with indivisible groups and the county parties, and just wanting to get out there and do something. They're, I think, horrified by what's going on in Washington with Donald Trump. We've had 8 years of total Republican control, and I think people realize that we have an extremely good opportunity this November to really change the nature of the state from the top of the ticket all the way down. And people are, look, they're excited. And our job at the party is just going to make sure we channel that energy to make sure that everybody's getting out, nobody's left behind. And we work really hard to make sure we get not only a Democratic governor, but a Supreme Court, State House. And I will tell you, if these trends hold, they should watch out in the State Senate, too.
Is it fair to say that the enthusiasm in the Democratic Party right now is the progressives, the females, the folks who haven't really participated in the party before?
Well, I would definitely say there's a lot of new people that have gotten involved in the party.
Can you quantify that?
Well, just in terms of party memberships, we had about 3,300 new people sign up for this convention that have never been party members before. Okay. People getting involved for candidates, for governor, for secretary of state. The energy is real. And, you know, I think it's a combination of a number of things, but people are excited. They want to get out, and they want to make sure that we send a really strong statement in November that Michigan is not a red state. It's not an orange Donald Trump state. It's a blue state.
Obviously, this was a very contentious fight for Attorney General with Dana Nessel and Patrick Miles. This is going to be tough to bring the party together, no?
Well, I will tell you this. I want to congratulate Pat Miles for running a really tough race and then getting up there and enthusiastically and with a full-throated message saying we have to have party unity. We've got to get behind the candidates from governor to attorney general. Look, anytime you have a fight for a position, there's going to be some people who win and there's going to be some people who lose. But I think people's eyes are on the real enemy and the real target, and that is the Republicans in Michigan and Washington.
It would seem like a loser in this would have been organized labor, UAW. Their endorsed candidate did not win. Does that mean that the progressives are now in charge of the party, or they're kind of leading things? Is that what we can read out of this?
No, look, I mean, we've got a broad, diverse party. Organized labor is the anchor of this party, but we've got people from all walks of life who are getting involved for a number of reasons. And I am confident that we're going to have a full slate of candidates that are going to have support from organized labor, support from environmentalists, support from people who are concerned about immigration and women's issues. So, look, there's new blood, and I think that is a good thing for the party. We have to grow, we have to be inclusive, and anybody who wants to be a member of this party is welcome.
All right, we're back at MERS World Headquarters, and guys, it was I was able to go to the convention. You guys were not. So I'm sure you've got some questions or some observations from the event.
Is that the longest convention you've been to, Kyle?
It could have been, probably for me, but I think you went to one with the Republicans one time over at the Breslin Center that may have been longer. Do you remember that one, the Wiser one?
The Wiser one. That was a long time ago.
I know it was. But yeah, this one was longer than...
But you got to admit, those runaway conventions are a lot of fun, though, aren't they?
They are. You know what made this one long, too, was that they did a new balloting system. You know, in the past, when we had the Bernstein-Layton race, they did it by folks holding their hands up and doing cards. And it doesn't take long for these congressional committees to go ahead and count cards, right? I mean, you're counting people with their hands in the air. This one, they did it through basically iPads, where they had to funnel these thousands of people to, I counted about 30, maybe they were between 25 and 30 iPads. So you can imagine how long it would take to, and even though it was just one choice on the ballot, right, it still took a long time. Now, originally, Nancy Quarles, who's the chair of the convention, said this was going to take 30 minutes, and it took well over 90 minutes. So that really stretched the length of the convention out to 7 o'clock, 7:30. People were still exiting at about 8 o'clock. So it was certainly a longer convention than usual, that's for sure.
So Kyle, could you get a sense of how many people showed up for Miles and how many people showed up for Nestle? Could you get a sense from when you got there who was going to win based on their support?
Not just based on who's wearing the T-shirts and holding the signs necessarily, but there was an enthusiasm advantage for Nestle. That was very clear. Regardless of whatever caucus you were in, it seemed like Nestle supporters were more boisterous. They were more present. They were more involved. When the nominations were submitted to the full convention, it seemed like the Nestle cheers came from everyone in the room. It didn't seem like it was in pockets, whereas the Miles enthusiasm seemed like it was in pockets. The 13th, the 14th Congressional, I think the 9th Congressional had some excitement. But his support was not as pronounced as Nestle. And as the votes were being tallied, I was able to talk to a few Miles observers who were just leaving and saying, well, we lost that one. I mean, they were almost resigned before the announcement came that they hadn't won this thing.
What was the sense of the party leadership? Because when I've covered these conventions where the people in control don't necessarily get their way, for example, Smetanka beating Scott Romney way back in 98, Engler wanted Romney. There was a lot of pausing. There was a lot of, you could almost feel it in the arena that this thing was out of control and the leadership didn't really like it. Was there a sense like that in the room? Or?
No, I didn't really get that sense. You know, it was more about, isn't this kind of great that we have this kind of enthusiasm? And it was kind of like you're riding the Bronco. You know, it's like, wow, this is great. We're off and we're riding. But are we really in control of this thing? I don't know if we are or we're not. But I think that there was general excitement that, yeah, things are really going our way. And you can tell it by looking at this room. Brandon Dillon was thrilled to have 6,700 people there. And if he'd had the choice between 6,700 people in that room and maybe Labor not getting the candidate they wanted, and 2,000 people in the room and Labor getting the candidate they wanted, I think he would have taken the former.
So these conventions are about kind of uniting behind the party's endorsements. Is the party united behind Dana Nestle?
No, I don't think so. Not at this point. I think Labor will get there eventually, maybe begrudgingly so. I mean, she's pro-Labor, so, I mean, she's going to be there for the issues. She's, you know, the Labor's problem with her is that they're nervous about her chances of winning in November. I think the dirt on her is going to be more pronounced than if it would have been Patrick Miles. You know, Patrick Miles is a lot more nuanced in his statements, and in a primary that didn't play very well at all. I mean, in a general election, he would be much more of a measured candidate, and you wouldn't have to worry necessarily about what he says. Where I think there's a fear that Dana Nestle is so plain-spoken and says exactly what's on her mind that she's going to get herself into trouble. And the folks that she has represented in the past has created a binder of hit material that the Republican Attorney General's Association is going to use against her. So there is a concern that she is going to be a drag and that that race is not going to be as easy as it would have been if Pat Miles had been the nominee. And then the other thing, Jack.
Are these concerns similar at all to what we heard on the Republican side for the past 8 years about the Tea Party and the party's not getting along very well?
I think there's a lot of good correlation there, honestly.
Well, let's remember the Republicans have won everything in the last 8 years.
Right.
So to me, depending on how much this plays, it might be a healthy sign that you don't look like an all-scripted party.
Well, that's a good point. But I can tell you that the folks from the Black Caucus are not happy that they don't have representation on the ticket. And you know, Jack, from covering for so many years, how important that is to the Democratic Party to have a ticket that represents the state of Michigan. And right now, the top of the ticket is four white females.
It cost that party Democratic races before for the governorship. I mean, look at Jim Blanchard. Detroit was anemic in their support for him when he ran for his third term, and who got into office because of it? John Engler.
And maybe the enthusiasm that the progressives showed overcomes that, and so maybe it doesn't make that much of a difference come November. But the Black community, particularly the folks in Detroit, aren't happy. When I spoke with Keith Williams, the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party Black Caucus yesterday, he said even having a running mate who was African-American wasn't going to be good enough. There is an enthusiasm gap there. I mean, they're not enthused by really any of the candidates, to be honest, who are running for governor. I'm not sensing a lot of excitement for Whitmer or Shree, and maybe a little for Abdul, maybe a little for Shree, but it's just, it's not like the enthusiasm they've shown in the past for other people. In fact, I thought the person who was most enthusiastic, the person who really got him going, was Reverend Wendell Anthony, and I don't know if you guys have ever heard him speak before, but he gave the best speech of the whole convention in seconding the nomination for Pat Miles. Shoot, if he had run for attorney general, he might have done better. That speech was amazing, and yeah, he got folks to their feet. Sherry Gay Dignago did a great job. She got people riled up in the 13th Congressional Caucus. She really laid it out there. But there's nobody who's running that now with this ticket that's really igniting them, really getting them excited to go to the polls. And maybe that changes. Maybe something happens. But Whitmer seemed to Gretchen Whitmer seemed to have to be poking the folks in the 13th Congressional District to support her. I mean, at one point she was kind of like, come on, come on. And they weren't getting excited.
And there aren't really any ballot issues on that are possible coming up that could, you know, create enough excitement to overcome a lack of excitement over the ticket, is there?
No. Auto insurance seems to be a big issue. Still is a big issue in Detroit, and that's not connecting. And not hearing a lot of excitement about roads or paid sick time or energy. The voting initiative that is going out there with the League of Women Voters maybe has a little bit, but no, there's not a good reason right now for African Americans to be excited to go to the polls.
So was there anyone else that generated a lot of excitement or did not generate excitement of note?
You know, going to the legacy dinner, I thought Kamala Harris did pretty well. I thought she was pretty well received. She did a fundraiser with Debbie Stabenow beforehand, and I think there was some general excitement for that. But again, this crowd was the Bernie Sanders crowd that was there. And so I think Bernie Sanders is still a favorite among the folks who were at that convention. I heard some support. You know, Joe Biden would be great. But as far as other people who really got folks excited, you know, I will want to say, Jack, do you remember when Gary Peters was in the state Senate?
Oh, yeah.
And he was every bit of an accountant, and he was about as inspiring as an accountant.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny because he's actually pretty good now, which may be more commentary on how bad everybody else has become. But yeah, he was kind of dry, you know.
He is not dry anymore. Let me tell you what. That guy was amazing. He gave some of the best speeches at the convention of anybody. So Gary Peters has stepped it up. And, you know, Debbie Stabenow had to be a little more mild-mannered since she's running for re-election. But he was great. I thought he did a great job. Brenda Lawrence gave a good speech, too. I thought she recognized each congressional district individually. And I thought she had people riled up as well. So I thought they both had real good convention speeches.
But these aren't people that are going to be at the top of the ticket this next time. So I don't know what that says.
I don't know. It was interesting. I don't know the reasoning why the gubernatorial candidates weren't given a platform just to give a stump speech or something like that. But they weren't. So we didn't hear anything from Whitmer or Alcette or Shree or Cobbs. They got to speak at the caucuses, you know.
Progressive caucus.
Except the Progressive Caucus, yes. They limited theirs to one candidate.
They were discriminatory over there in the Progressive Caucus.
Well, they certainly didn't let non-endorsed candidates speak. I'll say that. All right, well, with that, let's listen to some of the commentary. And to that point, let's listen to some commentary from Abdul El-Sayed, who was allowed to speak at the Progressive Caucus, about their decision on that. Abdul El-Sayed, I hear you had a rousing welcome and greeting today from the Progressive Caucus.
Look, we are talking about the same issues. How do we put people first in our politics? We're not taking the same kind of corporate buyout money. I'm not a millionaire trying to buy an election. This is about our policies, that sit on a set of ideals, and the ideas to make them to go forward. So we're excited. It's been an amazing conference. Really love seeing the kind of progressive energy, and you know, when we take it to the ballot box, I really like what's going to happen.
What is the feedback you're getting from the delegates here at this convention?
People are fed up. They're sick and tired of politics that's bought and sold by same corporations and millionaires who've been trying to buy and sell it for years. And this is a moment right now. And if we as progressives and as Democrats are not honest about our ideals, do not get the corporate money out of our politics, do not stand for a $15 minimum wage and health care for everybody, and stand up to the buyout that I unfortunately am watching too many Democrats take, I worry that this blue wave that we're talking about becomes a figment of our imagination. And so our job is to make it real. And when we make it real, you know, it's, I think, going to usher in a very new crop of public servants.
Not all members of the folks who are running for office were allowed to address the Progressive Caucus. Give me your thoughts on that. I guess it's their decision.
Well,
it's
not my decision. I'll just tell you that, you know, when a caucus makes an endorsement, that endorsement has to mean something. You know, I know there's only really one progressive in this race, so I can understand why they made that decision.
Has anybody talked to you about how things are going as far as securing your spot on the ballot? And if so, what have you been telling them?
We know I'm 100% eligible. Look, this is the same old corporate politics trying to handicap and kneecap a candidate that they know can beat them at the ballot box on ideals and ideas. I've always been asking for a campaign and an election that's focused on those two things. And, you know, when your standard issue corporate Dems can't deliver on either ideals or ideas, this is what you see. We know I'm eligible, 100% so. We made sure of it before I ran. I'm not the kind of person who wastes my time. So we know that I'm going to be on that ballot. And when I am, you know, we're going to change our politics.
And then I also want to ask you about the TV ads. Obviously, one of your opponents is already up, has been up for some time.
Yeah.
He's been able to see some results in the polling. Is that any concern to you?
The irony of watching a very rich man who decided he'd be a Democrat yesterday try and buy an election by buying a bunch of ads that, frankly, spew falsehoods, to me is against the very ideals of what it means to be a Democrat. He's playing by the Rick Snyder playbook. We've seen this before. Somebody who didn't know what he was, Democrat, Republican, wanted to be governor because he's rich and thinks the world could benefit from his insights, and then buys a bunch of ad space to try and get elected on no real ideas. So I'm not worried about it. Look, I'm not even sure that that he gets on the ballot. So,
you don't think he's going to get on the ballot?
Well, they're still trying to collect signatures. If the last thing I heard, they're trying to pay people $2 of a signature to get on the ballot. It's a great way to buy yourself a bunch of crap signatures.
And what about Gretchen Whitmer and how she's doing in Detroit? Seems like she's lagging a little bit in the city of Detroit. Any perspective on why you think that is?
Look, everybody knows that if you want to be able to earn Detroiters' votes, you got to get them something to vote for. It looks like more of the same, right? You can put your headquarters wherever you want. Doesn't change the fact that you don't know anything about Detroiters or their lives. You know, a lot of folks like to talk about Mike Duggan and his sweeping in Detroit. Here's the thing. He won 72% of an election that was 17% turnout. You do the math. It's like 1 in 10 people coming out to vote. So, frankly, Democrats haven't really given anybody anything to vote for. And so people stay home. Our job is to be able to connect on ideals and ideas. My job is to be able to get around Detroit and talk about the work that I've actually done for Detroiters, standing up to make sure that our kids weren't sucking on fumes from a big corporation, to make sure that kids weren't being poisoned with lead in their schools, to make sure that they had glasses to be able to see the board. And so I know that once we get our message out there, we're giving people something to stand up for because we actually care about the world that they live in. We've articulated an urban agenda that is probably the most comprehensive of all urban agendas of anybody running for governor in the country, because taking the time to learn, to understand, and to deliver solutions. And so I hope that I get to deliver on them when I'm governor.
All right. Thanks, Abdul.
Thank you.
So that was Abdul El-Sayed. So Sri Tanadar was not allowed to speak at the Progressive Caucus, as you made reference to, John. And he attempted to speak and then was kind of booed and hissed and led off, not the stage, but from the front of the room, and was led out of the room very unceremoniously. And he had some thoughts on that. Here's Sharif Tanadar addressing that incident and his general reception at the convention. All right, Sri Tanadar with us right now. Sri, explain the reaction you've been getting so far today.
I am meeting a lot of interesting people. People have come from all over Michigan. They have seen my ads, and they recognize me, and they like my progressive policies. And, you know, we want to make Michigan inclusive. We want to have Michigan's economy economy work for all. And that's what I'm excited about. I'm excited to meet a lot of people. We went to many caucuses. We had, you know, presentations, talks, conversation. And I think I love the enthusiasm Democrats have. And I think it's going to be a blue wave. We are going to get the House. Hopefully we'll get the Senate and definitely get the governor's race. So I'm excited.
As you're looking around here at Cobalt Live, certainly a lot of people here. What does that tell you about Democrat enthusiasm?
I think it's all-time high. I think the only good thing that happened as a result of the president change is that people are excited. People are really fired up. And I think 2018 is going to be a referendum on the Trump and the bigotry and the injustice. And we need to take our country back, and more importantly, and also we want to take our state back. And I am excited to paint Michigan blue and take care of our environment and take care of the people. And we need to get away from the corporate welfare that Rick Snyder has done. And we need to invest in small businesses, entrepreneurship. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I want to make sure we create jobs and we create good paying jobs, create skill sets for people of Michigan.
I just noticed that you were at the Progressive Caucus and you got a little shaky reaction while you were there. Are you concerned at all that they weren't going to let you speak?
No, it's not. I'm meeting lots of progressives all over the Cobo Hall. Look, I am the most progressive. I am the only gubernatorial candidate that voted for Bernie Sanders. I followed Bernie all over the place in Iowa. I stood behind the bleachers when Bernie was speaking. I met Bernie, and I love him. And I'm as progressive as anybody.
They wouldn't let you talk at the Progressive Caucus, though.
I think they just had the rules, and I guess that's how they wanted to run the day. But, you know, those were only a few people, but I was able to meet hundreds and thousands of progressives all across the Cobo Hall. So I'm able to get my message across to the progressives. And just today, we looks like we will have about 70,000 followers on our Facebook.
Wow.
You know, we opened our Facebook on June the 8th. And the other candidates, Whitmer had 41,000 at the time. Abdul had 15,000. And in the last 8 months, we have gained 70,000, while Whitmer has gotten maybe 14,000. Abdul has gotten like 25,000. So there is a lot of surge. There is a lot of momentum. Many of them are progressives. So we have a big support from all kinds of progressives all over.
I just spoke with an attendee who's concerned about your social media post a few days ago from the Popeye's Chicken right before a Detroit Black Caucus event. What are you telling folks if they bring that up to you?
Well, you know, that was the closest place to the caucus meeting, the forum meeting. And I eat there all the time, so I don't think it's much.
They want an apology because they think it's racially insensitive.
It was not. I eat there all the time, and all I was trying to do was invite them to the caucus, Black Caucus, and the meetings that we were going to have. You know, I'm a simple person. I'm an honest person. I'm not a politician. I don't, you know, act like the politicians do. And I just want the best for Michigan. And that's why I'm devoting rest of my life to public service.
You're already getting some attacks from that. There was a text message that went out that highlighted the Popeye's Chicken thing. What does that tell you?
This is part of politics. Politics is dirty, and I expected this, especially as my poll numbers go up. I expect more attacks. And this is nothing. when I fight with Bill Schuette, I would expect the Republicans to do the same too. I think Democrats need to direct their attacks on the Republicans. For the last 7 years, Republicans have taken this state too far to the right. And we need to attack someone like a Bill Schuette, who is such an opportunist, and he will destroy Michigan. He'll make Michigan into a Kansas or a Mississippi.
Very good. Sri Tanadar, appreciate the time.
Thanks a lot.
Joslyn Benson was the runaway victor for the Secretary of State nomination. There was actually another person who was circulating pamphlets for the office. Her name is Vanessa Simpson Olive. Do you remember her, John? She's run for legislative office before. I remember typing up a bio, I think,
for her. I remember the name vaguely, but yes.
Yeah. Well, she attempted. She did not get the signatures needed to get to the convention.
That's too bad. That's too bad.
Yeah. So it was uncontested, and Joslyn had so many supporters that she couldn't fit them all on stage when she accepted her nomination speech. Here's a fun fact. She gave her acceptance of the endorsement before the vote on the endorsement, which I think threw a lot of people off because there was already tweets that she had won the endorsement before they'd actually voted on the endorsement because they did it differently. And so I was actually sitting on the convention floor and some of the delegates said, "We didn't vote on this, did we?" "No, we didn't vote." "Why is she speaking? We didn't vote." I mean, the vote was unanimous. I mean, you know, it was perfunctory, but it was still kind of funny. But anyway, let's listen to what Joslyn had to say. Joslyn, how was it that you were able to clear the field? I mean, nobody filed to run against you or nobody got enough signatures to run against you. How is that?
Well, I'm proud enough to have built a strong statewide effort with a broad-based coalition of support that we've been working for, you know, since October, really in earnest to build. And so I'm hopeful and that what we've built is strong enough not just to win today's endorsement as we did, but to win in November. And so, yeah, I think what you're seeing today is really just a reflection of the recognition that we have built the right team to win. And once we built that team, everyone got with us because they saw that this is, we believe, the right team to not just win in November, but bring real change to Lansing.
What's the difference between this year and 2010, the last time you were the nominee?
I think there's an incredible enthusiasm for the types of issues that I ran on then and I'm running on now. You know, not just the 30-minute guarantee and the ban on driver's fee increases, but no recent absentee voting, early voting, working to make it easier to vote and harder to cheat. People recognize now what happens if we don't have protections in place for our voters, if we don't have election security. And so I'm grateful for that increased enthusiasm for our message, and I'm looking forward to taking that to the voters throughout the state now.
Do you believe the Russians hacked our elections?
I think no matter what, multiple intelligence agencies have confirmed that there was some shenanigans that occurred in 2016. We know that. But my concern is that those threats to our security did not begin in 2016 and will not end with that 2016 election. So our work now is to look forward and say, what do we need to do to protect the security of our elections moving forward against all potential threats, known and unknown? And that's why I want to create a task force of our security experts from around the country to advise us on all potential threats to our elections so that we're prepared on election day for whatever may happen.
How do you think Ruth Johnson did as Secretary of State, or how is she doing?
Well, I appreciate that she's adopted a lot of the proposals I ran on in 2010 and has created an opportunity for me to build on what she's done now and hope to create in the future. In my view, Michigan's fallen behind on a lot of election reforms that I've been talking about today. No recent absentee voting, early voting. And I want to work vociferously with the legislature to do everything I can to bring those reforms to Michigan.
All right. So what is the next step here for you going into November?
Taking our message on the road, going around the state. Tomorrow I'll be going up to Flint and Saginaw and talking to voters up there. I mean, I'm going to work hard every day to ensure that voters in November know the real choice, the clear choice they'll have in the Secretary of State's office between someone who's been a lifelong advocate for election security and voters' rights and someone who, depending on who opposes us, may take us in the wrong direction.
All right, Joslyn Benson. Thank you.
Thanks.
And finally, the last race of importance was the one for Supreme Court, where Sam Bagenstos and Megan Kavanaugh were the endorsed candidates. No real drama here at all. Nobody else was circulating And we were able to talk with Sam Bagenstos about the ticket, and let's go ahead and listen to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a really enthusiastic reception. I think, you know, people really want change in this state, and I think the part of the change they want is to the Supreme Court. They've seen the court go in a particular direction for a long time, and they want that to change. I think people are receptive to the work I've done to get justice for the people of Flint and for workers around the country. And so I think it's been really great. It's been a great reception.
Obviously, you've got a national reputation as a civil rights attorney. Why Supreme Court? I mean, everything seems to be going just fine for you right now. Why such a shift in getting to politics?
I think, because it's time for a change, because this is a time when we can make a fundamental change on the Michigan Supreme Court, and the court matters a lot for people. I mean, it matters for people as workers. It matters for people as consumers. It matters for the environmental issues that people care about, for issues of democracy. I mean, look at what's happened in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and the Supreme Court's there. So this court matters. This is a time when we can make a difference on it, and I thought I ought to try.
And for our listeners, tell them a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I teach at the University of Michigan Law School. I've been a civil rights lawyer for about 25 years. I clerked for Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the U.S. Supreme Court. At the beginning of the Obama administration, I was a political appointee under Eric Holder in the Justice Department, trying to work on rebuilding the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department, and I've been fighting for workers' rights and for people's rights for 25 years.
And you're going to continue working then, right?
I'm going to continue working, absolutely. I mean, you know, the goal is to be a fighter for people's rights. The courts are there to protect people's rights, and that's the kind of work I've been doing my whole life.
You're going to get the endorsement of the Democratic Party today. What's the next steps then for your campaign?
Well, and then it's just on to November, basically. I mean, we've been running a campaign all across the state. I've been in every congressional district of the state in the last couple of months. I'm going to keep getting out there to get the message out about how important the court is and how we can make change on the court this year.
And then fundraising, how's that coming along?
It's coming along fine. You know, I mean, I think people are really interested in this race. Obviously, you know, as a lawyer who never thought about running for anything, you know, who's been just basically fighting for people in court for a long time, that is the biggest shock, is how much time you have to spend on the fundraising, but it's been going well. People are responding to our campaign.
All right, Sam Bagenstos, thank you.
Thank you.
And that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Brandon Dillon for being available for the beginning of the podcast, all the other candidates for taking time to speak with us, and for the crew here. Until next week, I'm Kyle. Take care.